Move on to the first item on the agenda. The first report, should I say. The Newport Harbour Navigational Risk Assessment, Paper B, to consider the report of Mariko Marine. Sir, can I just ask you to introduce
yourself? Yes, my name is David Foster. I work for Mariko Marine. I've been your designated person for a number of years, and I submitted a report to you on 7th of November, which I don't think were included in your papers. Mm-hmm. I prepared this report here, which I believe is going to be sent to you after the meeting.
Okay.
What I'd do here quickly was just run through the executive summary. That's the navigation risk assessment, okay, which was done by the same company, but not me. I'd just run through the executive summary to give the highlights for you. Then please bang over any other questions you want about it. First of all, the point I made here was the get well plan that you're fed every time we have a meeting with progress. We've been chipping away a lot at that now, and most of the items which are within your gift have now been ticked off. There are a couple that haven't been. But the main ones are outside your control, which basically revolve around the harbour revision order. And once that goes through the system, then clearly getting your harbour or general directions through, and then taking all that forward. So that should be should sort itself out. The harbour revision order, as I say, is stuck with the MMO. You are not alone. To my knowledge, there are about 9 harbour revision orders. All have been caught in the MMO since about April this year. It's been a big change of people there, and the new legal person there has been very cautious about getting on with them. But I do know that when I was up there a couple of weeks ago, that lockdown looked so it's about to burst, and we hopefully, you and a number of other ports that we deal with, and hopefully are going to get some result. We're going to talk about the MCA's health check, but in my report also, I drew your attention to the anomaly about Ryde and Ventnor and how they are not included yet within your remit. This is an omission that we've all, when I say we've all known, it's one thing we've been briefing you about for a long time. And I think the general feeling has been, let's get Newport sorted out first and then move on to the others. But certainly it's picked up in a big way by the MCA's health check. And quite frankly, you are now in a state anyway, with respect, to say that you've got, here is much better order, and you've got a model against which to extend into both Ryde or Ventnor and or Beaufort, however you decide to go ahead with that. So I think you're in a good position to move ahead with that now, because you've got a safety management system that works, you've got risk assessment methodology that hopefully you're content with, etc., etc. I think, again, the whole committee itself, themselves, have been running for about a year and a bit now. And again, we've now got a proper, what I would call, management system that was in against with that. You remember there was that paper that came out for England only, as it turned out, because by the time it came out, Wales and Scotland had gone from it about governance of harbours, and you are following that governance pretty well now. So I think that's the two fell into place at the same time, which is good. And I think now there is proper leadership here, proper overseer, and getting there. I was correct today. My observation was that when I was younger, way back, when one went to ports and things as a professional seaman and as a yachtsman, the first place you would look to was the Admiralty chart and the the sailing directions or regional promotory yachtsman, and that was your first port of call. Nowadays, there's a lot of people on that big ships as well as intermediate ships go to the website first rather than the traditional way. I'm not saying it's a good idea, being a silly old chap, I would rather suspect it isn't. So your website is an important interface between you and, in your case, your yachtsman and, I suppose, a few commercial vessels like coming into vessels and things like that. My observation was it was quite difficult to find because it's lost in amongst the many sections within your own county council one. I mean, I had pointed out to me again this morning that if it, Google will find it for you very quickly. So in other words, dear old Google finds it for you. But if you go for it in a more logical way, it's not there quite so much. But Google does find it. But that website itself is improving. And again, the pre-meeting we had this morning is there are many things that we've talked about in, that came up here in the detail, which needs to go into that website as notices to mariners and things, which again, you now have a method of doing that, which that is reasonably easily accessible. The next thing is the paper that you were referring to a moment ago. We've finally got a proper navigational risk assessment has been done for the harbour. Long time coming, and it is now properly ticked off, and you should be having been briefed about what the top five or six hazards are, and you should be comfortable with it. And I think this is a paper that's been done by somebody else today. But if we've got that ticked off, and it's a model, and if you, when you look at how you're going to manage the other two harbours, maybe that's a model that you can extend across into those, so you've got the same system running in the three ports, etc. Sounds very like a salesman there, for which I apologise, but the point is, what you do want is a common system, do you mine or somebody else's? But I think that, at least we've got that one ticked off now, which has been a worry. Maybe less good, well, not so much good, and I think it's now something we need to polish much more, is the whole method of incident reporting, etc. The thing about running a small harbour like this is incidents don't happen very often, accidents don't happen very often, and when they do happen, it's quite there's a little bit of a cripes, what do we do now about it? So getting that sorted out in advance is something that's very useful. What you currently, at the time of the audit had, was a slight, mismatch, is should this be using your county council, incident reporting database, or the Solent and Southern Harbour Masters incident reporting base, and then how it was going to be handled internally thereafter. And it was, I think I put a note that I wrote it against my own thing here. It was a bit of a muddle about what's the correct approach. I think that's now been resolved since my report about how we're going to go ahead with it. And again, once we've got that decided, you should go out as a notice to mariners, etc., etc. So people know how to do it, and then internally you know how it's going to be handled, which database and everything as it goes on. Because it doesn't go into your marine one, or does it go into the same one that does accidents involving mowing lawns on roundabouts, etc., etc. Because councils have such a very, particularly county councils, has a very, very wide remit of all stuff that they have to handle. And how you deal with the watery bit against all the others is always a difficulty. I mean, I deal with a number of municipal harbours. And certainly my own experience is that the marine one probably lies more comfortably outside this is my advice, my sort of opinion rather than what it says in any code. It lies a little bit better outside, though you want to be keeping your record in it because you want to be looking at your overall incidents and radar incidents, etc., etc., throughout the lot. So it's really a sort of amalgamating of the two, but keeping the procedure for dealing with marine one slightly different to dealing with traffic ones. The emergency plan, you should have an emergency plan. The one that you've got in force at present was written in 2014. So much has happened in the harbour, it's gone from being a bit of a backwater to something that the light's been shone on much more clearly, it's been run much more tradition, not traditionally, in accordance with the Port Marine Safety Code now, etc., etc. And now's the time to get that finally updated. I know the work is beginning on that, and also is making it so it sort of meshes in the COWS one as well, because it'd be stupid having two different approaches to something that where you actually join directly to, and that is the, as I know, is the idea. Some of it can go onto your public websites, and maybe the contact, which again we were talking about this earlier on, and contact individuals and things like that. It doesn't go to the public, so the public can see what the plan is, but it doesn't, but not the phone number of the second harbour master's wife on Wednesday. So when you've got that basic plan, and then internally, how you contact people, yeah. Something like that. And that's something that, again, you, once you've got it going in, you have to keep it up to date. A slightly, I'll go back one. The two commercial berths that you're operating, there's Vesta and the aggregate berth on the corner here, whose name I forget, that's not in my head. Sorry? Goldstar's vessel, I can't remember the name of the berth. They're both what are called NAPSA berth, NAABSA, for over 10 minutes. And it's a really catchy name, it sounds for not always afloat, but safely aground. anyway, the NAPSA berth is, you know, it's berth where a ship goes alongside, the tide goes out, it's sitting on the sand, and the tide comes back in, and again it's loaded and it floats away. The thing you want to avoid is when it goes down, it comes down on top of an old shopping trolley, etc., etc. And there is a requirement and advice that those berths should be inspected by the berth operator or the harbour authority to make sure that the berth is safe prior to the vessel's arrival. Again, when you get the part of general direction, and maybe in the meantime, the notice to mariners reminding berth operators that is their responsibility for the arrival of the vessels. You will make all sorts of new and interesting friends if you do get a hole in the bottom of the boat and oil appears everywhere. So that's why I'm advising it. Really, you want to make quite sure that you've got it's made quite clear to you all berth operators what their responsibilities are. It's normally not so important about yachts, because the consequences are not, unless it's clearly on the, but for if you've got a large commercial vessel, clearly it becomes a much bigger issue, particularly if their tanks are in the buildings. Anyway, again, we talked about that a little bit more in detail. And Vestas, I don't know whether they remain over the tide or not, but again, what you don't want to know is anyone would be quite clear which are maps of berths and whether the people who are operating them know what their responsibilities are. I think you should be congratulated on
I mean, clearly that's an important thing, and I'm sure the committee would be happy to accept that's the recommendation, we should do it. I'm just wondering how we would put that into practice.
My operator here is... how is it pretty present? Speaking as when I was harbour master, we had about 20 maps of berths. We passed the responsibility on to the berth operator. I think you have to be clear about those berths which you are, are the berth operator to. In other words, you direct what goes on, and those which are rented out to others, and they then become the berth operator, and they take upon themselves responsibilities there.
Right.
Some ports actually lay down and have directions to berth operators. I think for a port of your size, that may be over the top, but again, I can direct you to some good examples of where the port authority city, many of us, Southampton's a very good example, where some of the ports belong to the Association of British Ports, and some are privately operated within the statutory harbour authority area of Association of British Ports. All of Falling, for instance, privately operated berths, but they lie within the SHA area of Southampton. To give you an example of a very local example and your big ships. So I think, whether it's worth paying grief to do it, but it's only a day, just as long as they understand what their responsibilities are. And then the general direction is a very good way of doing that. When you, if and when you get the power of general direction, because you just make it a general direction, then you have shown your duty of care.
Okay. David, can I just... Councillor Medlin had a question for you.
I'll
wait
to the end.
Okay, fine. All right. Please, carry on.
I think you've been congratulated on your campaign for getting rid of your old Ming, the old boats and things you've got lying around the harbour. You've taken a robust thing and you've done much better, I have to say, than many ports we deal with. When you walk around the harbour, for the years I've been operating, well, I've been not operating here, but I've been working here, you've got rid of a heck of a lot of stuff, and it looks an awful lot tidier, and you've got rid of a lot of things which are actually becoming obstructions as well. So I think that's hugely congratulated. Another one that you've been introduced, which I think is useful, you've over and above the council, not harbour authority, but council-run vessel inspection system done under the cracky 1908 Public Safety Act ones that you do. You've also introduced water taxi permit system. I think that's an excellent idea because the operation of what are known as under 12s, which are small passenger boats, is always an awkward area because the MCA has a lot of different sorts of regulations, none of which are particularly clear. And you at least show again a good duty of care that you've got the right person driving it, and the thing that they're in is safe. And I think that's an important extra thing, particularly as you're running ferry services and get out to the folly and things where you've got maybe not all the sailors that are going on and off are as sober as they ought to be. Again, another one you managed to get ticked off this year is getting the workboat, your own workboat, properly certified. Certified sounds like it's being injured, but certificated, and now it's properly certificated. Unfortunately, the guys who drive it need to get commercial endorsement on their qualifications, which involves a couple of extra courses to go to get the extra stamp on there. But it's all very manageable because in basic thing, the ability to drive was all that's all being covered already by their current certification. It just needs that in commercial endorsement done. Again, going back to this pollution thing again, be very careful about bunkering. Bunkering is putting fuel into vessels that are on site. There has been cases where road tankers have been coming down here during the Gold Star, a couple of other vessels here alongside without being properly supervised. What I'm suggesting is you introduce a permit system into this. Again, in no amounts to say you've done it, lingers to general directions when you get them. So you clear it, you make quite sure that you know it's going on, and then what precautions should be taken. Because, again, I would say, from my experience, more pollution incidents happen during bunkering, that often from shore, than anything else serious. Very rarely do two ships collide and fills up with oil. Quite often, well, actually nowadays it's quite rare even for that, because all ports have become so massively more conscious of it. And you, of course, with yourself, you've got your own oil spill response plan gone through the system, so yeah, every port's like that, and the retention is more. Then you've got the training going on now, so everybody becomes very conscious. But again, I think that's something else you want to make sure you've got that button well boxed in, so that people know what they're supposed to do. And again, I think the thing that came out this morning when we were talking was that lots of things are going into the safety management system, but they weren't getting out to the people that are actually doing the thing, to the harbour users themselves. So I think it's going to look bad, not bad, it's going to look a little bit awkward to start. A number of notices of amendments coming out covering all these minor subjects, but once they're there and promulgated, they become standing notices of amendments. So if you go to something like Southampton, they have about 15 standing notices of amendments which carry on from year to year. And then when you get general directions, some of those, you might say, I'll keep those as general directions, you will pass those notices of amendments into general directions. But it's getting these regulations. But it's no good having them in your safety management system. You don't tell anybody about them.
True.
And I think that, and the last one of the things here that I'm really pleased that you picked up on at last, but Peter has been taken forward at last, is we get the Harbour Master here, is now much more a member of the Solent and Southern Harbour Master Association, the UK Harbour Master Association, getting out there meeting and already looking at benefits from that by getting invited to join training things, etc. It saves you money, and also it not only does it save you money, but it widens his experience and the others their experience of you. So it's a very good move that I'm so glad you've taken it up. I'm sorry you didn't get this included in your papers. It's an enormously good read, and I'm just sorry you missed it. But joking aside, there are a couple of other minor things. They have been uplifted into the, or some of them, a couple of them more need to go across, been uplifted into the Get Well Plan thing. I remember I started before you when we got there, which used to be pages and pages, and John's going to talk about it. Few more here, but at least they're coming in. They've been taken from here, gone into the sections down here. So a few more to go there. But I think rightly, that's why I think here we're getting good now. I mean, we can hold our heads up and say this is true on the port reinsurance and compliance side. We're as good as quite a lot of ports now. Good. But of course, we've now got to bring, I think, this is just we have to think of how we take this move forward, the more of the place, the better, and right. Okay. So
that's it,
a quick gallop through of this report here.
Thank you so much for that. That was really enlightening. I'm assured that we will all get a copy of that in the course of time. Do you have any questions? John.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Mr. Potter, it's always good to have your overview. It's very, very useful every time you come and talk to us. And that's the most positive presentation you've given to us. It's fantastic that you did such a good news. And I must say, the papers are incredibly positive. I'm very pleased that all staff should be going. Pleased with the amount of progress that's been made. That's really, really good. The real particular comment I wanted to bring up was this inclusion of Ryde and Ventnor. I think I'm really pleased to see we've got a report on Ventnor in our papers. I know that Ryde is technically different, it's not a constitution under the Act, but as it is a property, it's again one that's losing a lot of money. You know, this is what worries me a lot, is now we're moving away from safety, because when we come to safety issues, we can start to look at the sustainability issues of these three assets. I mean, the assets make such a loss of money, we should perform assets, but they are assets. And I'm really pleased to see we have got Ventnor now here, and I hope we can discuss it. Hopefully in future agendas will include both harbours and we can look at them in a bit more detail and try to think how we can improve the situation. It's not, in terms of our budget, it's not a very good situation for us. But I am hugely pleased to see the improvements on safety and procedure. It's really good to see this.
I think the, we talked, we had a very, we had a sort of pre-meeting this morning, and I was told to calm down. we had a pre-meeting this morning, and we talked quite a bit about the strategy of this, and some of the things that had nothing to do with me in this papers about it. But in general terms, that we, as I understand it, is that Ventnor does appear to be has a statutory harbour property area in its own right, and therefore falls firmly in your lap, if that's the right way to put it. In the Port Marine Safety Code, the latest edition of it, which is, right, was September 18, I'm sorry, I might be wrong about the exact date it was, it said who the code applied to. And the code applies to all sorts of things, but if you are an anorak and read very carefully, you'll see that marinas still haven't been included, that don't lie inside other people's SHA areas yet. The aspiration of the MCA is to do that, because I occasionally sit on their steering group, but at present it hasn't actually gone on to the, it hasn't been included in as well. So their aspiration is very much to include marinas. So if you've got a marina that lies outside everybody else's statutory harbour authority, they should apply this to Port Marine Safety Code. And again, it's, they need guidance about which bits they should remember. Quite clearly, the code applies to Southampton, but not all applies to Scottish Lock. And the other thing is that, and again, I'm going to come over here and look at it for you now, and realise Austin's going to make me ask to do it this morning. It is exactly where how Ryde lies in the system, and what agreement was made with the QHM Portsmouth, whose live area it lies in at present. Are they the statutory harbour authority? Because, quite frankly, they therefore it's their baby. And how we get round this, and I should be able to look you in the eye because I was the Deputy Queen's Harbour Master when it was built. But I can't, and I can't remember, to be honest with you, exactly what the arrangement was. But it's. But again, once it's done, I and my company look after many municipal ports, and quite a lot of them have numerous harbours within. Numerous harbours within. And the one that I look after that I'm particularly fond of is Orkney, clearly, not so much Newport, but Orkney, 23 ports altogether, all with little signs. No, sorry, 12 little statutory ports, and then the two big ones as well. So it's no. Once we've got the management system, and then for the management system again, it's dead easy. You have you just have overall option how you're going to do it, and then you have little subsections for what is specific to that particular board. So it's all very manageable once you decide to go ahead.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Not a question so much, Chair, but perhaps a bit of information as we've David raised
I think
in the ownership of this council, we should treat them exactly the same as we treat any other party. We are in discussions both with Ryde Town Council and with Ventnor Town Council, who have aspirations to take over and run those I call it the marina, because that's effectively what it is. And in the case of Ventnor, it is a statutory harbour. Ventnor is losing its money significantly year on year, and Ryde makes, on paper, a very slight revenue income, but the liabilities grossly outweigh what we're getting income. We're in, the final few weeks or months with Ryde Town Council, because we have asked them to provide for us within the next couple of months detailed proposals. They have asked us to help them by allocating them some land and some possible franchises to ameliorate the cost of taking that over, and that's something which we will look at when we have the detailed proposals from them. Ventnor is at a later stage because it is only literally in the last 3 months or so that Ventnor Town Council have said that they would be keen to take it on as the management authority for it, which of course would require MMO approval. But they are also saying, and can we let them have some sweeties to help cover the cost? So we are in ongoing negotiations with both. I think in the meantime, they're very firmly our responsibility, so we have to do whatever is necessary, both in terms of management and finance, to keep them going.
Okay. Andrew, did you have a question?
Yes, Chair. But first I wanted to check, was any officer going to speak specifically to paper B, the risk assessment?
You were,
in which case I will wait until
okay.
until they have done so.
Okay. Alan.
March.
nice terms of reference to the next committee if people get with that.
Mm. Yeah, good. Okay. Right. David, if you wish to stay, feel free to depart if you want to.
I think you've got me on. I think I'm supposed to have another right slot.
Okay, right. Jonathan, you're on next, sorry.
So, people at Humber, we had a close very basic navigation.
Can you move the mic a bit closer?
Sorry. Originally, we had a very basic navigational risk assessment that we had for numerous years that was put together when I started with a lot of aid from David and some coffee. It's great that we managed to get a complete up-to-date one that was carried out by America, but wasn't carried out by David, as he's independently being our designated per person, so it was carried out by the company but by another member of their company. It was done with good review of everything, and then we also had a lot of consultations with people who actually use the boats, the operators of the boats. As you can see in the later sections, meetings that we held. In general, the risk results have been very encouraging. If you go to page 16, it gives you the summary of them. And our biggest risk at Newport Harbour is leisure vessels crashing into each other. And this is still in a lowest reasonably possible sort of category. That will be helped when we get general directions so that we can give them a little bit more enforceable encouragement not to crash into each other.
She should buy some more on time.
But the other activities that we have going on are reasonably controlled and seems to work very well, and there wasn't anything that sort of goes too badly. The risks are formulated, I would think, the worst possible thing that can go wrong, and then lots of unusual things to do. So a good example of this is someone walking along and they fall over and they feel silly but not really hurt at all. Someone falls over, bangs their head, rolls into the sea, drowns. That's the worst that can happen. So it's got two scorings of both and an average is done at the top, and then it goes into a very clever secret system that America used, and then you get the score from it. So that's how we get very precise figures. So that's where we've got 4.41 is our high skills, instead of someone walking around going, it's bad. So it is actually based on something behind it, not just the opinion. Happy to take any questions.
If I may, Chair, it's exactly that black box that I want to explore, this precision of figures. So we're down to the second decimal point. It's impossible to reverse engineer the formulae that behind this, but I am deeply suspicious of something that goes to a second decimal point when we've got potentially subjective assessments on categorised logarithmic scorings. So everything scales up by a magnitude of 10 or scales down by a magnitude of 10. Ultimately, that doesn't worry me so much. It's more about, for example, those which have been ranked second and third, whether there's sensitivity within the equations behind this that would have taken scores of 3.65 and 3.58 into the next level up, had a different choice in just a couple of places or something else about the algorithm being different. I really need to be satisfied that there is a sensitivity analysis has been done of these figures, just to be certain, or that is at least recognised and that I can be reassured that the robustness of what is supremely precise numbers on what must be ultimately quite subjective judgments informed by experience. So I would say, lovely black boxes it may be, but until I see the gubbins inside it, I am going to trust them.
The information in the black box, as I understand it, is on experience in other courts and histories. But I would have to ask for more clarification. I would be exceptionally vague. I'm not sure how to do it, but I know it's a well-used system that they've used for numerous years.
But you get my point. What we need is Marico to come back and say there is no reasonable possibility, even if we've taken quite a liberal difference in assigning scores of 2 and 3 falling into this ALARP category, which is, although it doesn't require us really to do much, does seem to require us to do something other than to be aware. So I'd be really quite keen for that to be checked with them, that these numbers, the robustness of them can be accepted.
I think I can help you with some that's here now, and I can invite you to the New Forest, and we'll take you through our course on it. what we do...
At your expense, but yes.
But joking aside, the system is, to start off with, is based on what's used in the nuclear industry and is laid down clearly in the Guide to Good Practice, it's the IMO system. It derives from the most likely and worst credible assessment, and the formula that gives you those rather strange decimal points is weighted so that risk was the individual risk and that hazard, the highest one is weighted higher. To give you an example, when you look at any incident, we look at it in terms of what is expected on people, property, the environment, and business, and public perception. In other words, it's all part of business. And we looked at it twice, and we the most likely and the worst credible. If you go clearly to here into the annexes, you always know chaps a bit worried when you're going into different annexes, you'll see the demonstration here of what the frequency of that system, you're quite likely, it is a logarithmic scale, and the consequence scales. Now, you put your finger on something that's true of all ports all over the world. The consequence is fairly easy if you're a mariner, well, actually all of us around the table. If two tankers bash into each other, lots of oil, lots of dents, you know, the port gets bunged up, the whole lot, and that's the worst available. Most likely is they two glance against each other, there's a lot of shouting and a bit of bent paint. They even bring you a bit of scratch paint in there. So that's the whole idea of most likely and worst credible. So everything isn't marked like two jumbos colliding at the top of Waterloo Station at Russia. Because otherwise you just close the world down. So the nuclear industry uses this, and my background, my way is from nuclear submarines in the background. So that's where that comes from. So I think when we look at consequences is normally fairly easy amongst a group of people to come up and agree, fairly comfortable with consequences. You're a very small corporate, we do things like, I've just come back from doing, well, I'm just in the middle of doing Aberdeen, and I'm just come back from doing Newcastle. So, it's much easier because it's much more, the issues are much bigger. The difficulty is frequency. And again, you put your finger upon this. Frequency is always, in the perfect world, frequency would be done on incident data. And as you rightly say, it's it's a scale that goes from one end once a year through to something around about 1,000 years. And we all know that really the 1,000 years is very much a mathematical and not an anomaly, but a way of describing it. So when one's allocating frequency, that's where it's more subjective. And it is subjective. And the smaller the pore, the less information, with the less incident data, the more difficult it is to become. Because, I mean, how often do you have a collision in this harbour? Very rarely. Because it's such a tiny number of movements. Whereas what harbour is in Port of London? I mean, how do I put this? I have some friends and family with the MAIB because we were having so many minor bumps the whole time. So we had a much better feeling for frequency. So the frequency is much more subjective. And that you are absolutely right. So then you come to this whole business about points. Now, I could tell you the formula. How it works is you look at the most credible, most likely, and you take most likely people, the frequency of most likely people, so the risk for people, the risk for property, the risk for environment as well. And then you add on to that the highest score of those there, and you do the same for the worst credible, and you take an average across the lot. That's why you get that rather strange point. My advice to you is what you want to be looking at is, first of all, the ranking. Where your higher is to where your lower is. How effective are the numbers? The numbers are an indicator rather than something black and white. And again, this is exactly the same as Southampton and Portsmouth. Don't think that you're in a special case. It's the ranking that counts and what looks that it's going into, or much more importantly, when it starts going red out the top, you are running a very, I hate to say this because something that's awful is going to happen tomorrow, but low risk operation compared with Southampton. That's why the numbers appear to be low, and that's why you've only got one there that's even borderline at the bottom end of out. That's the description of why. You're right about why does it looks sort of it. We could quite rightly round those up so you don't see those, but it is so the ranking. So just so the computer works out the ranking, we can hide those numbers for you in time like.
If I may respond, I think David has now allowed me to peer under the bonnet. I think I now know where to pour the oil in. And that's about it. But that is helpful. And indeed, your final comments actually are the most important here. I think for me, it still remains like if I would hope that somebody in the back office would have said, if I just varied one or two of these figures, would that have gone from a 3.61 or whatever that number two is to a 4.11, and that changes the band that I fall into. I'm not overly concerned because even at 4.44 for the highest of those, that is a long, long way. No amount of kind of subjectivity blurriness would have taken that into the next band up. So I hope my point's been taken, that it's really important for us to understand that there's a cognitive bias within people that the more precise a number, the more they trust it, and actually that's where we often fall apart because of that. Actually, sometimes it's the broad number which is the more informative, and anything with a decimal point you should really be questioning, because actually you can never, it's not a meaningful number in that context. But I've laboured my point, so thank you, David.
I think the other thing is there is a diagram in here which
The banding one.
Afforded colour.
Yes.
you would see how things that very. It's not a black and white; it's a grey. And also, you'll see here where that band goes. And you've got to draw lines somewhere. And you're absolutely right. It's at the bottom end of Aleppo, the very top end of likely, whatever happens to be.
Yeah.
And there will always be. I'm sorry, I should press that. There always will be. That sort of blurring at the edges. We're doing the Thames Tidal Tunnel through the centre of London at present, and we've got 26, so 13, 14 sites they're running. And the Port of London Authority wants to know for any of those sites when it's gone out, halfway through out and above. And we are talking there about point ones and twos. And we are finding ourselves arguing about points ones and twos. And I keep on saying to them, we are looking at it, it is too grating sometimes to really, we, I think we have to stand back and say, does this pass the common sense test?
Yeah. Thank you.
And that's the real thing, is the common sense. And I think the theory, with the, well, there it is in colour. That common sense test is in, does that look right? And is the ranking and is the top looking about where you would expect? If it looks wildly wrong, well, it probably is wildly wrong. And some of the mistakes being made somewhere, or you, quite frankly, when I did one full lump run after I'd finished work. And I discovered a whole lot of risks that I had not thought of when I was there. So it does, the system does tend to work as well. Yes. But it's, I don't think those are the exact number, but I think ranking and general feeling where it is the things that you ought to be looking at. And you should be conscious of which ones are top of the pops.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's enough for me.
Yeah. We move on to the Get Well Plan. Jonathan, are you
it
doing
might
that
be
as well?
In colour
it is, yeah.